our meeting was scheduled to start at 12, let me, without wasting time, start by welcoming all those who have managed to log in.
Before Muscle Ladies,
No, you don't hear me. The meeting is now starting at 12.
Oh, no, I'm not attending the meeting today. I have given an apology.
Okay.
I'm busy with the... I have a wedding at home tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm actually at the shops at the moment. Tonight there's something happening there. We've got over preparations to do.
No, no problem.
Good
afternoon, members. Good afternoon, members.
Good afternoon, Honorable Slebu. I want to say you are all welcome before we're disturbed by Honorable Dodo and Honorable Sheikh. I understand that it's a very difficult day because most of us who are busy with our constituencies. Thank you very much for attending the meeting. It is seriously well appreciated. We do not intend to waste anyone's time. We will be really businesslike without compromising the quality of the discussions and of the meetings. I will then go straight to our next item, which would be apologies, although they are not written here. I know that I have three formal apologies. The one is from Honorable Zanda Mela, and the other one is from Honorable Sheikh, who has indicated in the meeting that is busy with the wedding somewhere. And the third one is Honorable Bartlett, who doesn't feel well, so he had to go and see a doctor. Those are the only three apologies that I have. I know that Honorable Tedwa is struggling to connect and join the meeting. Honorable members,
I've joined, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tedwa. We have only four items in terms of agenda, five including a closure of the meeting. We'll be entertaining a petition that is written by Mr. Landman, Michael Landman. And after that, we'll be dealing with the Minister of Mineral Resources, dealing with the executive undertaking, which emanates from the question and answer session, which was held on the 10th of October, 2019. And the last one, we will be having a report. We consider the report of Abatembu and as well adopting it. We have invited the legal advisor from the MCOP. Before we consider the item and adopt it, he will take us through some legal advice in terms of the petition itself before we start discussions on the matter. And the last item will just to be considering the outstanding meetings of minutes of our meeting. And then thereafter, it will be a closure. Without then wasting time, let us take Mr. Landman. I know that we were expecting the municipal manager to be part of this meeting. We were as well expecting the office of the MEC, if not the office of the Premier. But both offices have apologies. One, the MEC has just received the bereavement news from the family member, and the Premier apparently is engaged in a meeting with the MEC of police, so is unable to join us. I said, therefore, we will be entertaining the presentation by the petitioner, and then thereafter we'll discuss our way forward. Can we do that?
Sir.
Are we in agreement, Honorable Members?
Sir.
Sir.
structure is the dome.
Yes, Honorable Michaelitis, you have your hand up.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chairperson, I did not hear exactly the reason for the absence of the municipal manager and the mayor. I understand that the MEC's brother had died, and I understand that that is more than a valid reason for being absent specifically today. However, the municipal manager and the mayor, I did not hear what the exact reason is for them being absent. I understand that the mayor has scheduled visits to local clinics and hospitals during this time that the councillors only received notice of last night. And he's doing those visits today until the 25th. Now, if that is the case, Chairperson, I honestly think that there's only 5 or 6 sites that he is visiting, that it would have been better for him to prioritize Parliament and to visit those sites tomorrow and the day thereafter, as he was planning to do in some cases. So that for me is not specifically an excuse for the mayor not to be here. I would just like to know if they indicated to you what their reason is for not being here. I just want to point out to you as well that the previous time when this municipality appeared before SCOPA, it was also only the speaker, the CFO and the MM who appeared. The mayor didn't appear over there. So I do think that we need to be quite strict with them in that regard and to actually demand that they make their appearance before the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. As I indicated when I was doing the opening that on this item that we didn't get the response from the municipal manager. The mayor, I didn't get the response from the secretary of the committee what were the reasons. Hence, I said, let us entertain first the petitioner, and then later on, we dwell more on absentia of those that were supposed to be here, and also in terms of our way forward on the matter, so that we find a way of managing time that we do not have by entertaining the petitioner, and later on we get deeper to what exactly we are dealing with. Can I get a seconder on that?
Sure.
I know all your concerns, Honorable Magalhães.
Thank you, Chair.
Chuck is the dog.
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanna. Yes, I now have the understanding, and the understanding is that only the petitioner is here in this meeting to make a decision. Isn't it that advisable that we want to hear the petitioner addressing the municipality in their faces, that they are not here today? And personally, I don't take the reasons why the municipality is not here. I thought that you were going to say we must point a finger at the municipality that they must not disrespect you and the process of Parliament, that once we are requesting them to come, they are obligated to be part of this meeting. I mean, if the mayor is not available, he could designate one of the, I don't know whether is that the mayoral committee system or the executive, I don't know whatever that is. He could designate a member of the mayoral committee or a member of the executive committee to attend the meeting. So that based on that, we should then take a decision whether we allow that person to address us or not. But just not a municipality, not be present when you call them, it is something that I don't really take lightly. I think it's wrong. It's unacceptable. Now, I don't know, maybe because you've ruled, and I don't want to inconvenience your ruling, but I wanted Mr. Landsman, as you said, to address us in the presence of those particular councillors. Because, yes, I think it's good that he's here, they are here, and that we listen to them, so that they mustn't come and say, we didn't hear this, we didn't hear that, and he's got to clarify one or two issues again. If I had my way, that was going to be my suggestion. But secondly, accept the apology of the MEC because of the situation at home with regard to the father, that we do understand that. Yeah, that's my point, sir.
Thank you very much. I have not yet ruled on the matter. I was just suggesting the way forward. But if the committee feels strongly that we first need to discuss this, I am open to that. Let me allow Honorable Margalitis, he was the first to raise the hand, and then thereafter I will take Isaac Silefu as the second on the matter, and then we summarize. Over to you, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chair. I'm indebted to you for giving me a second opportunity. Chair, I absolutely agree with Honourable Dudovo that it is necessary that we need to have the municipality here to give answers, but also to have Mr. Landsman present to also give a response to their replies. He is the petitioner after all. But what I would like to propose is that we also hear from the petitioner to get his sense as to how he thinks this should be conducted. Because to some extent, Chairperson, the reason why it's now before the NCOP is because the petitioner has been waiting for some form of relief for a very, very long time. And the municipality is now actually delaying the process unfairly even further. This is not fair towards the public out there. But at the same time, Honourable Dudovo is right in saying that it's necessary for us to make sure that the municipality can't turn around and say that they weren't able to give a response. So I do think that it would be advisable perhaps to also get the petitioner's input on this. But we need to find a balance between not delaying this any further and also making sure that the municipality comes to account. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Silefu?
Oh, good afternoon, Chair. Thank you very much. Basically, Chair, it's Honourable Michalakis has covered me. What I wanted to raise was the fact that the reason why we have actually have this meeting today is because of the petitioner in the municipality, there is no answers. And there's a reason why we have to intervene. And for us as parliament to intervene, to make sure that what the petitioner is asking for is actually replied to on the spot, it's not happening. So I don't know whether the municipality is running away or maybe they don't take us serious as parliament, but it's really, really unacceptable for us to have scheduled this meeting while we are still on constituency period, you know, to make sure that you really want to hear the people of Free State and really want to intervene. And for the municipality, you know, for people who are staying in the same area, not being able to sit in one room and try to get these answers. And for them, when we are here and they are not even here, they are scheduling meetings which can actually take place at another day. It's very, very unacceptable. And I really don't know how we are going to deal with them and make sure that we are really, really serious. Because we cannot waste time and ask people to come to our meetings and they don't come to our meetings. But other apologies in terms of the MEC, you know, we understand them. But for the mayor just to go and do oversight on his own and not even delegating the speaker or the deputy mayor or any member of the MEICO, it's the sign of respect on us. And it shows, that's why we are, you know, that's why we have someone who has a petition, you know, and this petition has been coming for since 2009, if I'm correct, for many, many years, and there's no just, you know, there seems to people, they just seem not to care. And today, it's a confirmation of that. What is happening that people don't care, you know, that's why they don't regard us as anything else but just people. Thank you very much, Chef.
Thank you Thank you very much. I am hearing you saying this matter needs the presence of the municipality. Yes, we can allow Mr. Landsman to just say something on this matter before we take a decision that we delay again the petitioner until all stakeholders are present. But let's hear the voice of the petitioner. Yes, I'm in full agreement with you, honorable members. We cannot allow anyone to disrespect us as the petition, the committee that deals with petitions. If someone is called into this meeting, it's an obligation to come and address us. He's not doing any favor to us as a committee. We'll make sure that the municipality is present and also the office of the MEC or S of the Premier at a provincial level are present so that we all deal with this matter collectively. Can we allow then Mr. Landsman to address us on this matter? He's feeling that we should continue or add this way for everyone to be present. Over to you, Mr. Landsman.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Thank you so much. Yes, I personally feel that we should continue. I feel you will see as well in my petition that despite court orders, despite previous meetings with ministers, everything, all the departments basically, and still the municipality did not attend meetings. I feel it's a disrespect, and also it shows there's no respect for the community and the basic needs which we have. And this is a continuous problem. I personally feel, and as Director of Lisawell feel, that it's important that we continue because we do give them many chances and still they fail. And I feel it's disrespectful to the NCOP as well if they don't, if they can't even, comply to requirements of a court, then I mean, obviously, Honourable Makilaka said, they're going to do site visits and so forth. That means the community is not important to them. So I feel we should continue.
Okay. Thank you very much. Then, without wasting time, let us allow the petitioner to present to the committee. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Yes, the petition is very important for us. I think everyone do have the petition in front of them as well. There's a lot of pictures that will show exactly what's going on in Windberg at current stage. The biggest problem we've got is no municipality can perform if there's no financial stability. There's no revenue income. Currently, I will start with the assets and orders. The biggest problem with that is Chapter 7, Section 153 of the Constitution stipulates a municipality must structure and manage its administration and budgeting and planning process to give priority to basic needs of the community and to promote the social and economic development of the community. Since 2016, there is no audits handed in. I did have a report there as well from the Auditor General. There is no audits handed in. That means since 2016, the municipality didn't hand in the audits, which is a great concern because what's happening with the revenue, what's happening with the funding. And also with that, they've been under administration and it keeps on failing. Even the administrators do not comply to the rules and regulations and they don't hand in the audits or the financial statements. And even 2016, there's been some documents which is not handed in, although they had an audit, financial audit, still they failed. And even with Scopa, when they had the questioning and answering session, it proves there as well that they did not hand in financials, even though they said forensic audits will be done, still nothing happened, which is a great concern, because it's important to gain revenue to basically pay for everything and to have a economic development. But the problem is if they, that's also, again, disrespectful, because they know it's important to hand in financials. And I feel there's a lot going on with the financials which we don't get. And also to comply to the rules and regulations, there's nothing. They're supposed to comply to what the law structure basically asked them to do. And still they failed that. I feel that they just continue on their own doing whatever they want to do and planning what they want to do. But we as the command, I also want to bring to your attention that despite of the audits, they just continue going on to the long term and the big budgets. For example, the Siyabanya mine, they get finances from there. We got finances from Department of Water and Sanitation, and they're supposed to upgrade, which they don't do. And that's a big concern, because they get a budget, they don't use the full budget, and what's happening with the money there. So I feel there should be an individual forensic audit on individuals as well as budgets regarding the funding, because there's surely a mismanagement currently going on, because you can't have 4 years where you don't hand in your financials. For example, as well with the administrator, administrators was appointed, they fail, then they send more committees to attend to the financial situation, still nothing. The CFO, as well as the MM, just resigned previously. And I feel they need to be accountable individual for the mismanagement of the funding. Nothing happened there. For example, with Scopa as well, it was under the attention that 3.7 million rand was paid into a wrongful account for Eskom. Then also there was supposed to be an investigation. Not a mayor, not a MM. They do not give us feedback regarding what happened to that funding. And I'm sure there was no legal action taken as well. And we want to know what happened to that 3.7 million rand, which was paid in a wrong account. As well with that, 2016, the municipality of Masilionyana had about 20 million rand Eskom debt. And 4 years later, they stand on 73 million. So the funds that the community paid for the municipality, for the electricity, what happened to that funding? Because they're supposed to gain revenue. The debt is supposed to be lower. And also they make arrangements, but there's nothing happening. They don't stick to the arrangements with Eskom. So it's a great concern. They're just making bigger plans to get to they're just making plans to use the big budgets. But what about the revenue they're supposed to gain? I want to also with the auditing as well. 2016, they had 20 million, which was not allocated. What happened between 2016 and 2020 with that specific funding? When they said they paid the minister of Eskom, where did they get that money? And if they do pay Eskom and they go in agreement, what's happening with the in-between, with the money there? Why is there no revenue gain on this? I feel this matter should be taken very seriously. They're working with millions, and the community don't trust the municipality with the finances, which I will stipulate will give more input on that a bit later. Also, the committee there's no financial soundness as well, because we've been waiting for our municipality or for the accounts for a very long time. Previously, they don't have ink, they don't have cartridge, they don't have paper, they don't have the facilities, they don't pay the service provider to use the systems, and then again, we don't get an account for the municipality. Then it continues to the next step where, because there's no accounts, they put interest on our bills. And then we need to pay the interest as well. But when we want to speak to a financial department at the municipality regarding their funding or about the charges, then they said, sorry, but the person is not available or the system is offline. We can't continue like that. It's a lot of challenges. We've got a lot of elderly people all over Windhoek, all over the Tiernes and Brandfort, all four towns. But the big problem is not everyone can afford every time to go to Tiernes and say, okay, we need to speak to a financial department. Recently, they moved again financial offices. Why do they keep on moving the offices of the financial department if there's a lot of offices in Windhoek to use, as well as in Tiernes, and I'm sure they're in Brandfort as well. If I remember correct, they're busy building offices in Verkeerdevlei now. But that's the thing we've got. No assist with the finances. So, for example, this month, we didn't leave accounts. So how do they want to gain revenue if there's nothing? The problem with the accounts as well is if we don't pay, they put interest. If we don't pay, they want to cut off the electricity and the water and everything. But if you drive out, just enter Windhoek, for example, on your left-hand side, there's a Eskom substation. That light, even the spotlights in some area, is on during the day. It's a waste of money. There's no organization. There's no structure to say, this is your job, this is what you need to do, and they don't do it. It's like that light on day and night, it's spotlights taking a lot. If an elderly person can't afford the electricity because this mistake account, the municipality is doing nothing about it. I've been calling the MM on his cell, the mayor, the speaker of all over, in provincial, the premier. That's why I ended up going to parliament, because there's nothing we don't get assistance, which we really don't appreciate. Section 18 plays a vital role in municipality as well. Why is there no communication? The mayor said in his speech to the speaker that they're currently working on a system to give better or to have a better communication system so that they can assist the community and deliver better services. But if they fail to even answer on the invitation for the NCOP meeting, and even when we call them to get assistance, they fail us, which we feel the mayor did not tell the truth there, because if the mayor was telling the truth in a speech June month 2020, then surely your officers would not struggle to get communication or feedback from the municipality offices. And that's why we are in a battle all the time, because there's no communication. If there's power or load shedding, they don't inform us. Also with the communication, the Section 18 members is supposed to have meetings. It's not happening. That makes things more difficult, and we are concerned because what's happening at the municipality, especially during lockdown. For example, the mayor had a meeting with another project manager regarding the oil, regarding the coal gasification project, which was done on the 9th of June 2020. What about the Section 18 members? Why did they not attend the meeting? Why does meetings take place when there's no one else? The community participation, it's not existence. Because when the MM, for example, do a meeting in Winburg, then he will tell us, he will send us the minutes of the meeting. We never receive minutes of meetings. We stand up every time and say, we need minutes of this meeting, of what you're telling us. Nothing happened. This is a great concern because there's no cooperation of the municipality. We feel they're disrespectful with the community. We feel they lack big time performance, no income, no revenue income. But also, which I would like to say, is the waste of funding. For example, they recently bought 4 mobile toilets, one for each town, which gets used for funerals. With all the respect, but the toilets is not going to bring income. If there's no funding to operate, how do they want to transport that mobile toilet on wheels to a funeral and to the next one? Because regular, there's no funding for fuel to operate. The staff can't do their work because there's no fuel. They don't pay their fuel. And community members had to contribute towards this as well, so that people can just move from the one point to the other point and open up a drain or stuff like that. But there's no accountability for what they do with the funding. And one of those toilets, average price, is about plus minus 80,000 rand. And then that's excluding the stickers, the logos which they put on. And that's almost 400,000 rand just on that, and it gained no revenue, which is a great concern because the priorities is definitely not balanced with the municipality. Then also I would like to and then also with the funding, the municipality is wasting a lot of money because when they fail or they don't attend, so some of the community members do contribute for the finances towards fuel out of their own pocket, and they put fuel in because there is the municipality runs every 3 weeks out of money. So yes, I feel that the project which they've done with the mobile toilet, which was really not a good thing, they could have used it for much better priorities. Then, the municipality as well, like we said earlier on, they're not attending meetings. So they don't want to communicate with the public as well. If there's an issue and we want to address it, they're never available. But as soon as a budget comes in, they want to do everything except what they need to do. And that's a big concern. For example, AgriForum, they had a court case against municipality because there was no land offence around the landfill. AgriForum had to take them to court, and it cost both parties, the municipality and them, 500,000 rand each on a court case. That's 500,000 which could have been used on installing toilets in Malaketla, for example, but they're wasting money. They had to pay further in the petition, you will see as well, there is about 5.4 million rand, which they had to pay out for a court case as well, and Verkeerde Vlei, and that was also because the landfills set alight, and the fire caused havoc in Verkeerde Vlei, and the municipality had to pay 5.4 million there as well. If we look at Eskom, for example, they make arrangements with them. 73 million is still outstanding, but they're prepared to buy mobile toilets. Which one is important, the electricity or mobile toilet? The mobile toilet is not going to gain revenue. Then also with, for example, AJ Mining. AJ Mining is the contractor which normally allow the people to, or basically they service the pumps, the water pumps. Then the municipality don't pay them. Then they say, no, but the company didn't bring back, for example, the big pump, which they use at the waterworks to supply water to the town. So then I've spoken to the owner, the CEO of AJ Mining, and he could show to me directly the pump has been taken back to the municipality, and the municipality neglected the area. There's no security guard in human, not CCTV cameras. There's no security protecting the property, which is really valuable. So no security. They don't worry about the infrastructure. The pumps were stolen off at the waterworks. They stole it and nothing happened. There was no investigation, there was no follow-up. The municipality just said, AJ Mining, they still have the pump. I had meetings with the Minister of Officers from Department of Water and Sanitation, because then we've got water for 1 week, then we don't have water. Then we have water for 1 day, then for 2 days we don't have water. There's always a problem with the waterworks. And even then, the minister's office represented by Mr. Aviva Mankwa, he's currently no longer with the department, but even he said in his meeting that the municipality is not taking the water crisis seriously and the service delivery in Windhoek. He drove all the time from Pretoria to attend meetings here, hopefully to see the municipality, the MM or the mayor at a meeting, and still they fail. And then he will have a meeting here with provincial people as well. Then he goes back to Pretoria in the same day. So he really put effort in. But the municipality received, if I remember correct now, a 82 million budget for infrastructure upgrade and only used 14.5. The sad part about that is they've used that money to upgrade the waterworks or the water plant. And then the main infrastructure which is next to the main dam, they don't keep it up to standards. They built a huge dam there to filter the water, everything. When the minister's officers visited Windhoek, you will see on the photos as well, he did not attend, they didn't use it. So for the municipality, it cost them 14.5 million to upgrade the system. There's no guarantee on the service providers' work as well. So now there's a new tender which is out, which was also a battle in court. And again, they go to the waterworks, they start working there again. But is that new dam which they built also part of this budget which they've got for this year to upgrade the infrastructure? Or is that again a mismanagement so that someone can get a cut out of this project? Which is a great concern, because there was a court case already about the current contractor at the waterworks and how the tender was handled regarding this contract. And which is a great concern, because there's again funding which was spent on court cases. But if they really had a look at the municipality and at the service providers, and the municipality actually investigated, researched the contractors, then there will be no mistake, because then they will know if the company is capable to do it or not. I feel there's,
you have 10 minutes left.
Okay.
To finalize your presentation, please.
No problem. Yes, also with the, they're currently busy with the waterworks, but another thing which is a great concern is the accounts, because there's nothing. Also, the infrastructure of the municipality, for example, the assets of the municipality, there is, they've got like a grader, which needs to serve four towns. There's no fuel for them to go from the one town to the other one. They appoint service providers, and then the service provider do nothing, and still we need to, or then they claim money from the municipality, and the municipality can't pay, and then they need to have auctions. And then the property, the assets of the municipality get sold, so service delivery is not possible because they run short on equipment to do it. Also, with the finances, why do the municipality claim for overtime, for example, on salaries, but there's no service delivery? If they don't service, if the vehicles and the staff can't perform, the staff, even medical aides, don't get paid. And that's an ongoing thing for years now. Like the previous MM's house, they raided that because they thought it was him that didn't pay. There was no compensation to them. With Eskom as well, if they don't pay it, two people, one person actually died during Elna. She actually passed on due to power failure, which happened at night, and she was using an oxygen machine. And it was by the municipality, which don't pay the account. And the lady passed on, and there was no compensation, nothing. It was just finished, which I feel which is unfair, because high priorities is not important for them. And also, contractors, they need to be guaranteed on their work. There's no way that they can tell and say, sorry, your job is finished, there you go. There needs to be guarantee on the work, and the community needs to be involved as well when the municipality wants to do any project. For example, the gas, the coal gas gasification project, which is a great concern, because now they want to put a pipeline from Mashibeng, Virginia, to Windberg, to supply water to Windberg. But at the very same time, they're planning on doing this project in Tiernissen, and then they can supply coal to Eskom, which is a great concern, because the Fall River is not, there's big problems with that. Now they want to supply us with water from that side to here, so that once it overflows, in Windberg, it will go to the Erfenis, and from the Erfenis, they can draw the water for the coal gasification in Tienissen, which the community is not happy with, because if they can't run the normal municipality priorities, how do they want to run a coal gasification project? And I mean, we're talking about mercury in that project. So what is going to happen with all the water? Is this not to benefit themselves? And we feel it's not a good project to do. So they want to use that big budget now, supply water to us instead of just from the Erfenis back to Windberg, or even another way, but from Windberg or from Virginia to us. It's a very expensive a project. And we also feel that that is to benefit the municipality themselves and not for the community. We feel that's a subject which they need to stop immediately. 2014, they started with it, then they ended. And now recently in June, he started with the very same project as well. And like I say, there's no community participation. They don't allow the staff to do that. The second last point is just the prepaid meters. They did receive a budget from the Department of Energy where they were supposed to put in or install prepaid meters. When we had a meeting with the MM, he said, no, sorry, I already appointed he. Please take note, he appointed already the service provider for the smart devices, which the community is not happy with. We want to buy electricity directly from Eskom. We want prepaid meters, the one where you can buy directly from Eskom. It's been going on. We've been begging and begging and had meetings and discussions about it for months, for years, and still, what happened to that money? Why don't we have prepaid meters installed in our houses, even businesses? And then the MM will tell us, but sorry, you're still paying not enough for the service. I mean, there's no service, the economy is going down, and still they want us to pay higher prices, which is unfair. We insist on having prepaid meters. And then just the last point, the municipality, they've been under administration before, and we feel that they fail us in each and every way. There's nothing we can do from our side. It's no use to take them to court to get the assistance from them, because it will cost us money, it will cost them money, and still then they don't comply to it. I feel there should be a proper, full-on forensic audit on each and every department from the municipality as well. They need to be liable for all the mismanagement which happened. We want to see a municipality perform, because currently there's no performance. It's all empty promises and nothing happened. And we're tired of property rights, everything which is incorrect, the bills is not right. So please, today we really want to ask, help us. We don't want just empty promises. We really want action. We as a community wants to stand together, but we need the help. Please. I thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members.
Thank you very much. Your member, Mr. Lanson, thank you very much for your presentation. I've allowed you enough time so that you present to the fullest. Now, I will then allow members of the committee to just ask questions of clarity so that when we discuss the matter, at least the facts are quite clear. Can I then see the hands of those who would like to ask question of clarity? Hands? I only see one hand, Honorable Margalitis. you would like to ask a question. Can we then allow you and there's also Honorable Sulegu, and then thereafter will be Honorable Dodogu in that order? Thanks, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to get some clarity from the notes that I've made from Mr. Lansman's presentation. It seems that the core problem in this municipality seems to be the finances. I mean, if I understand him correctly, there was no audit handed in since 2016. So this entire current municipal term, they've never complied with the audit requirements in terms of legislation. It seems, and that's why I asked the question, that members of the community then have to pay from their own pockets to give or to buy fuel for the municipality to be able to drive around and do their job. The accounts are wrong, so where do you get your income from? And the Eskom problem is escalating, like in all municipalities in the Free State. So do I understand correctly that what you mean to say is that the control of the finances in this municipality seems to be out of hand? Because most of what you say in terms of service delivery should be in place if there is proper financial management in this municipality. I just want to get clarity on that, because on everything that you mentioned, it seems to be able to be linked back again to financial management or finances that either something mysterious has happened or not properly managed. I just want to make sure if I understand that correctly. And the other thing, Chairperson, that I perhaps want to mention is I've had a look again at the petition that was submitted while Mr. Lansman was speaking. And he also over there indicated a few things that he doesn't get answers from the municipality from. I would like to make a suggestion, perhaps, that we ask the municipality to send, before they appear before us, written replies to all those questions raised in the petition, so that we can get clarity on that. But
As of now, we are not on the way forward.
Yes.
We just ask questions of clarity. We'll have our own time to discuss the approach to the report itself. Okay?
That's fine. I just wanted to mention that perhaps. But if I can just get some clarity from Mr. Lansman on that one point. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Sulegu?
Oh, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, my first one will be just to clarify to the question of the 3.7. Is Mr. Lansman saying that the 3.7 paid to Eskom was deposited to the incorrect account? Can you just clarify that, give me more information in terms of that one? And also, what does he mean by saying that the Section 8 committees does not meet? Is he saying to us that they are just there? Can you give us just more info in terms of that? And also, Chair, can you also clarify the issue of the, when it came to the adopting the budget of this financial year? You know, whether that budget is funded or is unfunded. And because I also checked in terms of the audit outcomes of the current financial year, it was me now, and I see that their audit outcomes are still outstanding. And I don't know, Chair, to do whether this municipality is under Section 139, because by hearing all these things that is said by Mr. Lansman, I've got so many questions, which is not questions of clarity, but it's question of interrogation. So I'm actually limited, you know, by the chair to engage properly, you know, with Mr. Lansman. But I will leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Okay. In this meeting is Honorable Dodogu, not Mr. Dodogu. Can we then go to the next one?
I like you for that, Chair.
Honorable Dodogu?
Yes. Just some few points, Chair. I want to reiterate what I said, that a good interaction and conversation can be in place if the two parties, which in my view are the culprits, are part of this meeting, and that is the provincial government as well as the municipality. I did analyze the status of this municipality. It was placed under administration around 2018, and that the administrator had to be recalled in this municipality because he was fearing for his life. There were a lot of threats against the administrator to an extent that the HOD of the provincial department as well as the DG of the whole province had to be the co-administrators in the same municipality. And it would seem that the problems of this municipality are not coming to an end. And with the information at my disposal, around September last year, this municipality appeared before the Portfolio Committee of COGTA in the National Assembly. And for them to appear, it was after they tried to dodge and not be present in a number of meetings, and they had to be subpoenaed to attend the meeting, which means that this is not the first time. It would seem that this is a pattern on the part of this municipality, a municipality that doesn't submit the audit financial statement, that is using the third-party payments to pay for their staff, the municipality that is paying the MIG, which is a conditional grant to pay salaries of its employees. Now, there is a whole basket in our analysis about this municipality, and in my view, there could be a very good engagement with the municipality in their presence, asking them questions together with the provincial government. Now, I'm going to make a proposal, Chair, in relation to that, that one, when we call them for the last time, that they must appear before us so that we engage with all the issues that are on the table. We must also invite the office of the Auditor General.
You are also way forward.
Okay. I don't have questions except to say that I'm waiting for that moment. And based on the discussion, I'm going to request you to allow me to make some suggestions in terms of how to move the process forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. My question of clarity to the petitioner, what I'd like to know, he mentioned a lot of non-participation of citizenry in terms of the affairs of the municipalities, which would be a very serious legal matter. Because when we talk of municipality, we talk of an institution that is three-legged. One is official, two is politician, the last leg is members of the public. So what I would like to know from him, do you imply that even when there is a process of IDP, you do not have mayor and the mayoral committee going ward to ward or cluster to cluster of this area to get a mandate from, I would say it's a mandate, to get citizenry participating in the formulation of the IGP in line with the budget allocated to the municipality? I would just want to check if is, are you saying is that not happening in that municipality? Thank you very much. Over to you, petitioner.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Yes, I would like to respond to your question. Yes, that's indeed correct. There is no mandate, and they don't follow the procedures. The public participation, for example, the IDP, like they have now again in the budget for toilets and so forth, to start that project. But they know the biggest concern or the biggest request now from their communities, for example, prepaid meters and not smart meters. And then the municipality call everyone to the town hall, and then he will have a meeting with us. So we get a chance to raise our points. But for example, electricity, then he comes back. He did not even request from the community, from the Section 18 members to go forward with the smart meters. He just decided by himself to continue and do the smart meters. Still, we haven't received any smart meters. So now the municipality is, the company from the smart meters is already charging them funding, and nothing has been done. So yes, with the IDP, the public participation is non-existent. We don't get minutes of meetings. If we tell them the prices is too high, the community can't afford it, have a set price in the town, then he will rather tell us, please, you're still paying very cheap for your electricity and for services. You're supposed to pay much more. So I feel he's kind of forcing himself on the community, but only when he wants a meeting, then we can attend it. And then there's never a balance with that meeting to say, this is what we decided, this is how we go forward. So leg three is non-existence. Yes, to respond to Honorable Makilakis, yes, they did not do the audits or handed it in since 2016 was the last one, but still, there was outstanding documentation as well. Like I said, the MM and the CFO resigned overnight, and nothing happened there. There was no investigation as to what happened. There's no answer to outstanding documentation, and which is a great concern, because still the municipality is currently taking hands with Machibeng Municipality, which is the Welcome area, Virginia, and they also have an outstanding audit, like I showed in the petition. So there's also outstanding audits from Machibeng Municipality. So why do the municipality connect with the Machibeng if both of them fail audits, which we feel that connection should not be there, because none of the two municipalities is balanced. With the Eskom as well, yes, no revenue gets gained because we don't get accounts. If we do get accounts, there's mistakes on the accounts. And if we, for example, make a payment of 2,000 Rand, it doesn't appear on the system. It's not reflecting on the account, which is a great concern, because you're supposed to see when you make a payment, it should be there. So now it doesn't reflect the interest again, even though you paid, but it doesn't reflect on the account. So mismanagement is a very big thing which is running. And the agreement with Eskom to pay them, and now 4 years later, every time arrangements, 4 years later, we're standing on 73 million Rand, where we started at 20 million in 2016. That means 20 million Rand per year increase, which is a great concern. So what do they do with the findings, with the funds? I don't know. But to answer your question, the community have to contribute themselves. If there's no water, they need to get fuel and generators and pumps to pump water from the one point to the other point. But still at the end of the month, the municipality wants their service delivery fee, which we feel it's unfair to the community. And then to answer Honorable Seleku, yes, it was 3.7 million Rand, which Eskom did not pay. of which the municipality did not pay. And that means we're in for load shedding again by the municipality. The 3.7 million, it was mentioned in the meetings as well, Scopa, where the investigation they had was 3.7 million was paid into a lady's account and not to Eskom's official account. And then they were asked to do an investigation on this matter, because it needs to go to Eskom. The only last communication we received was it's under forensic investigation. And then on the sideline, we heard, no, it's going to the Hawks, busy for investigation. So we don't know. The 3.7 million, obviously that's from the community who contributed towards the Eskom and municipal accounts. But that 3.7 million rand, we don't know. Did the lady pay it back to Eskom or the municipality? Did they pay to Eskom? Unfortunately, I can't get access to that because it's private information of the municipality. And I mean, they will not give me the figures as to what happened there. But the community wants to know what happened to the 3.7 million, which was taken up in minutes of meetings before. So yes, nothing has happened there, and an investigation needs to be launched as to why we as the public also don't get feedback. We also feel it's our funds that's going in there. Why is there mismanagement? How did it happen that I paid it into an incorrect account? Then outstanding financial years, that's correct. It is since 2016, it's still outstanding, and like I said, it's really we're concerned because they're taking hands with Machibeng municipality, and they also do have outstanding audits on their municipality as well. So it's a great concern for us at this stage, because we don't feel safe, not with finances, not with the entire setup of the municipality. It's like a bomb that's going to explode, and who will take responsibility for that? And then sorry, Honorable Nolovo, I missed your question on that one. Sorry, I tried to make notes on the side to answer everyone. If you can just refer back to your question, please.
Thank you very much for the clarities provided. I'm sure now you will be ready for engaging in your presentation. On that note, let us thank you very much for the efforts that you have taken, the presentation that you have made for us, the write-up that you have sent to us, the pictures and everything that supports your presentation would be of good use to us when we further engage to what is happening in that particular municipality. And there's confirmation that the municipality is under Section 139. We picked up that even the administrators at some point, they were threatened to the extent of resigning overnight and leave the municipality. The matter will be left with us. We'll sit down and look at it. How do we take it forward now that the municipality is not here to present in front of you on matters that you have raised? We will then communicate with you immediately. We'll finish discussing our way forward and tell you from today how do we move forward. And obviously, our moving forward involves the municipality and also the provincial structure. It can be the premier. It can be the MEC for culture. It will be more relevant for us if it is an MEC for culture who has a responsibility of supporting the municipality and as well of reporting to us as the NSOP. So on that note, thank you very much. You are now released until we will communicate with you in writing. Thank you.
Thank you.
The meeting is not adjourned for honorable members. It's only to excuse you, Mr. Lakshman. Thank you very much as a very good citizen who looks after the interests of others. Can we then move to our discussions now in terms of how do we move forward on this matter? I do not want to leave the House. There were some proposals made. One, that we need to invite the municipality to come and account on these matters that were raised by Mr. Landsman. And then thereafter, I'm sure we will have to go and see some of the things that he has highlighted in terms of his presentation to Free State. I'm happy that we are one committee with Honorable Dodo Ovu. Because in his plan, Free State is one of the areas that he is planning to go and visit. Maybe it will make our work very easy as the petition, that when he has such a program, we also link our plan for this particular municipality with the plans of the committee, so that we are all in Free State and able to deal with each and every step in terms of the petition. Can I then allow the members of the committee to discuss the way forward?
I
am waiting for him. Honorable Dodo, whose hand is up. Honorable Michael's hand is up. Honorable Fester's hand is up. Those are the three hands that I have on my chart. Over to you, Honorable Dodogu.
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Based on the responses and the presentation, I'm making the following proposals. That one, we must request Parliament to allow us to summon to invite this municipality again next week, depending on our schedule. But this is quite urgent. We must give them a 7-day notice so that they attend around this time next week. We must convene. Two, I propose that we add some institutions that must come and give us a proper assessment of the municipality. They include ESCOM and the office of the AG, so that we go to the bottom of this question, that they have not submitted the annual financial statements for such a long time. That three, we must also ensure that the Department of COPTA is present, is available during our interaction. That is quite very much important for them to do that. The other one is to agree with you that because we planning our next visit, if we get a quick approval from Parliament, our next stop is Metsima Holo, Masilonyane, Bloemfontein, as well as Maluti Apofu. We have already started making that proposal to Parliament, so that in our next visit we should agree that we should link what we are discussing here with our visit, or oversight visit, proposed oversight visit to the Free State. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dodogu. The next one.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Magaleke.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to second what Honorable Dodogu said, including the timeframes that he set out. I think it's fairly important that we, while the petition is still fresh on the committee's table, that we deal with this Chair, I just want to make two additional proposals to Honourable Dudorbo's ones, and I hope he will support mine as much as I support his. And that is that, the petitioner must please be present when the municipality presents, so that he can be able to respond to it as well. And that we also ask the municipality to respond by Monday. If they have to present to us next week, that they respond by Monday to the questions posed by the petitioner in his petition itself. I think he set out a section under every problem that he mentioned, setting out the exact questions that he has. I think the municipality owes him at least some form of a reply in each of those cases, and that we perhaps give them until Monday. Today is what, Wednesday? So they will have almost the whole week to come back with those responses, that we request them to submit those to us as well when they come and appear before us. That would be my additions to Honourable Dudorbo's proposal, but first and foremost, I want to second him on what he has just said. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Fester.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I agree with Honourable Dudorbo and Honourable Michalaki. I just want to add, we have to have a report also of the administrator, so that we can know what has happened in Transplight in that area B. So that's all that I can add to that.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think we are in agreement that we need to invite the municipality within the period of 7 days. They must ask
for me.
Someone is speaking. Who is speaking?
Zandamel.
Honourable Member Zandamela, can I give you a chance to speak?
No, I'm covered, Chair.
Wonderful. Sure. We are agreeing within the space of 7 days that we need to see the municipality, and the COPTA department must be part of that meeting with a presentation that will include the report of the administrator. We also invite the Office of the AG. We invite, I'm adding this one, MPEC, because we need to know the role of MPEC in that municipality. And as well, we invite SALCA. And in the municipality, it will be MPEC, it will be the executive mayor and the MM. Those people would like them to be present in the meeting because they have an oversight role to make, the mayor and MPEC. The CFO and the MM, they are the custodians of the finances of the municipality. So if there are challenges in terms of finances, we need to know where were they, what were their roles in terms of what is happening in the municipality. Lastly will be SALCA. SALCA is the association of that office. They also need to give us their own perspective so that we go there knowing exactly that we have all spoken to all necessary stakeholders on this matter. Yes, the petitioner, he is going to be present. And the last person that we didn't speak about is members of the community. We know the petitioner is representing them, but in terms of our plan for this meeting, members of the community were supposed to make their own submission. I think we need to give them a window on this particular day so that everyone is listened to. And when we take decisions fully informed of what is happening in that particular municipality. Can we agree with that summary or a way forward? Honourable Members?
We agree, Chair.
Brilliant.
Thank you very much. In that note, it means we are done with the petition. And our program is saying we should be then 3 o'clock, starting with the undertaking and also the reports of Tabatembo. So I would like to consult you, Honorable Members, that whilst we do not have yet the office of the minister, can't we deal with the Abatembo report so that we pray for
you? Yeah, well,
can I hear your views? I'm giving you, Honorable Jodogu.
Sorry. Yes, I support it, Honorable Chair. Hold on. I support it, Honorable Chair.
Okay. Can we just have a table report? Who is seconding that? The house is quiet.
I support you.
Thank you, Honorable Fayela. Can we then ask who secretary of the committee to check the legal advisor to quickly take us through the Abatembo perspective in terms of their analysis legally? Can you do that for us? I'm giving a 5-minute break to locate the legal advisor because I didn't see his name yet.
Okay, now I'll do that, Chair.
Can you do that for me, please?
Yes, I'll do that, Chair.
We have a 5-minute break and then we'll be back. And one back. Are we back? Honorable members.
Yes, sir, I'm back.
Are they back here?
You caught him on
the way. Thank you very much. Let's check our advisor if he's back already.
Hi, Chairperson. Good afternoon. I am available.
Oh, good afternoon, sir. Without wasting time, let us allow you to please take us through. Are you with me?
I am with you, Chairperson. Before I start with my presentation on the legal aspects of the Abatembo petition, which the committee has considered, I would just like to confirm, Chairperson, if the committee members have received and looked at the draft report on this petition, which was circulated by the committee secretary. Okay, Chair. I'm asking the question because... Yes, Chair? Can we hear me, Chairperson?
Yes, I can hear you now, but you are breaking from time to time.
Okay, Chair, it must be...
Now we can hear you.
Okay. No, Chairperson, I just wanted to double-check that because I will be speaking on the basis that the members have had sight of the draft committee report on these petitions.
Yes, we did.
Just to briefly... Thank you, Chairperson. Once again, Chairperson, good afternoon to you and to the honorable members and the colleagues who are in attendance in this meeting. Just to preface my presentation on this matter, Chairperson, I have looked at the report, which is quite extensive and details the work of the committee. And I have developed an oral presentation, which I will be giving the committee now, on the legal aspects of this petition to ensure that much of the work that the committee has done here is anchored on the law to avoid any possible litigation and any other adverse outcomes which might otherwise result. Chairperson, I will start here on the just by way of background. I will start on the constitutional reference to the work that you are doing as a committee here. In that, Chairperson, I will refer to Section 1 of the Constitution, which is the section that details the values of the Republic of South Africa as a constitutional republic. That's Section 1C of the Constitution, or the value specifically relevant to us today, is the one in Section 1C of the Constitution, which says the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa is the one that is founded on the supremacy of the Constitution and the rule of law. It sets those two values as the anchor values in terms of which the Republic of South Africa is founded. Section 2, just after that section of the Constitution, Chairperson and the committee, states that the Constitution itself is the supreme law of the Republic, and that all law or conduct which is inconsistent with the Constitution is invalid, and obligations that are imposed by the Constitution must be fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two very important sections that I wanted us to just have in mind as we go on in the process of the Constitution, and that the obligations of the Constitution are binding, and that conduct or law that is inconsistent with it is invalid. For still referring to the Constitution, the work of this committee adheres to the constitutional obligations of Parliament, which are set out in Section 56D and 9D of the Constitution, which say that Parliament, through its committees, has the power to receive petitions from members of the public or interested persons, or representations or submissions from any interested parties. So this is what the committee is seized with in this Aba Thembu petition. It's a process that is detailed in the Constitution, which has also been emulated in the rules that govern the committees of Parliament. Now, having spoken to that constitutional background, Chairperson, I want to come back and speak to the process of this Aba Thembu petition, which the committee members are familiar with. It is very detailed, its background, in the report that I was asking about earlier. Essentially, Chairperson, this petition is about land reform. Particularly the issue of restitution of land which the petitioner claims belongs to the Aba Thembu Nation. The aspects of this petition that also speak to issues of the justice system, where he alleges that there is a persecution of the Aba Thembu by the justice system in South Africa. He cites a couple of examples. You can cite the Mr. Makhosoma example, and the name of the president of South Africa, President Thabo Mbeki, is also mentioned in the petition as examples of how this so-called Aba Thembu are being persecuted by the justice system in South Africa. There are also some human settlement issues that are raised by the petitioner in this petition. So essentially, those are the three issues. But in the main, what is very clear in the pattern of the petition throughout the first considerations of this petition by Aba Thembu Nation is that it is a matter related to land reform, or at least a claim as to the land which belongs to Aba Thembu. So that, in essence, is what we have anchored our discussion on. So just also to speak to the process of having been furnished with the report, to see that the process that the committee has undertaken in considering this petition is in line with the rules of openness, fairness, and proper consultation as outlined in the Constitution and the rules. And we're quite comforted, Chairperson, that the committee has discussed the matter quite extensively, deliberated on it. It has consulted all the interested and affected parties, including the key stakeholders, which could have assisted the committee to come to a fair and logical conclusion of the matter. We count amongst the key institutions that have been consulted by the committee. We count the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights. We count the National House of Traditional Leaders. We count the petitioner themselves. so the petitioner himself and other relevant, key relevant stakeholders. So on the issue of consultation, as the constituents involved must facilitate involvement of the public in its processes, we're quite comforted that there was sufficient consultation there, Chairperson, to meet constitutional master or legal master. Just want to mention, Chairperson, that the issue of traditional leadership, which is also inherent in this petition, as a question, is an issue that is recognized in the Constitution. Specifically, in Chapter 12 of the Constitution, there is recognition of traditional leadership. So it's not an issue that just exists in a vacuum. It's a constitutional issue. It's recognized in the Constitution. Specifically, 7 of the Constitution recognizes traditional leadership. And Section 212 of the Constitution provides that traditional leaders must be recognized, including stating their powers and functions in a national legislation. In that regard, Chairperson, the Parliament has passed such legislation to govern the recognition and the powers of traditional leaders as it relates to tribes and other matters of the law. And that legislation is called the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, which governs the entire system of traditional leadership, including the tribes, which are recognized prior to the Constitution as tribes within South Africa. They are recognized or constitutionalized in that act that I've just mentioned, that was passed by Parliament. Now, kings and chiefs and basically traditional leadership in general, is recognized in terms of that legislation. So where a person, for instance, in the form of a petitioner or anyone else, and speaking on one of the tribes which exist in South Africa, they would have to anchor their representation of that tribe as a legitimate representative of a tribe, especially around issues that are governed by customary law, which is the issue of land ownership by tribes. They would have to prove to the committee that they are recognized in terms of a South African law which recognizes traditional leaders, being that Traditional Leadership and Government Framework Act. Now, we have looked at the petition, Chairperson, from the perspective of establishing the capacity of the petitioner to represent the nation of Abatembu as it relates to Abatembu claiming the land. And we have satisfied ourselves, Chairperson, that in terms of the laws as applicable currently, being the Constitution and the legislation that I've just mentioned, the petitioner would lack the necessary local standing, the capacity to represent the tribe of Abatembu in this land claim that the petitioner is referring to in the petition. We understand, Chairperson, that the Abatembu have a recognized king who is recognized in terms of the applicable laws of the Republic. And I will not dwell on that matter, Chairperson, because it is a matter of the general public knowledge, which is common cause, and that I would not necessarily dwell on for the purpose of this presentation. And we do understand, Chairperson, from the report that a representative of the Abatembu from the Kingdom of Abatembu presented to the committee, referred as Mtikaka. I don't know if it's king or chief of Mtikaka, but there was a Mtikaka who formally mandated by the Kingdom of Abatembu to come and present to the committee on the version of Abatembu with regard to the claims as outlined in this petition by the petitioner. And that there is a clear and unequivocal denial by Abatembu that the petitioner represents the nation of Abatembu. Again, Chairperson, this strengthens our argument that perhaps the petitioner lacks the necessary local standard or the capacity to represent the Abatembu in this petition that is currently before the committee. Chairperson, on this basis, I would be comfortable to say that less local standing, and that to the extent that the committee had to follow a legal procedure in looking into this petition to investigate its veracity or to its veracity, we are comforted, Chairperson, that the committee has done all that which the law expects the committee to have done. On the substance of the claim itself, Honorable Chair and the committee, we just want to say the constitution, properly governed by the constitution, specifically Section 25 of the Constitution, speaks to the issue of land reform. That 25, Chairperson, there's a subsection in that 25, which is Section 25-7, which says that communities and individuals who were possessed of property after 1913 as a result of past discriminatory laws are entitled to restitution and to equitable redress. The issue of land reform, Chairperson, that where a community or an individual is claiming that they were dispossessed in terms of the past discriminatory laws, particularly, Chairperson, of importance here is the date of 1913, which is the date on which the Native Land Act was passed. That the laws of South Africa, the Constitution being the supreme law applicable, recognize 1913 as the year after which people who lost land must be restituted for the land that they have lost. In essence, Chairperson, what that means is if we say that the Constitution in Section 25-7 speaks to the date of 1913, it means that any land claim or claim to land which precedes the date of 1913 is one which is not currently catered for under South African law. Now, that is only for the purposes of restitution, Chairperson. But when you talk about reform in general, you have the aspects of land reform, which is land redistribution, for instance, which has been used by government to deal with all of the claims which could have been before. You also have land tenure as also a form of strengthening rights of people over land, which is another measure of land reform. But the cut-off date of 1913 is the one that speaks only to the issue of restituting land, restoring land to those people whose land that was taken away after the cut-off date of 1913. Now, that important date of 1913, Chairperson, is again repeated in the Restitution of Land Rights Act, which is the act that was passed in terms of Section 25-7 of the Constitution, to provide for restoration of land rights. That 1994 Act reiterates that the land that must be restituted is one which was taken after that date of 1913. It says so in the long title of the Restitution of Land Rights Act and repeats it in Section 2 of that Act, the specific date of 1913. I mentioned this date of 1913, Chairperson, because the petition refers to the land owned by Aba Thembu 2,300 years ago, because this is where he traces the history of his ownership, claimed ownership of land by Aba Thembu. Now, that is an inconsistency with what the Constitution provides. If members would reflect to the start of this discussion where we said that the Constitution Supreme, that which is provided for in the Constitution or against the Constitution would be invalid, whether it is a law or it is a conduct. So that's why this date of 1913 is being emphasized. So on this basis, Chairperson, again, on the substance of the petitioner's claim that the land that he is referring to is land which was taken 2,300 years ago, the petition committee would not have the sufficient jurisdiction to adjudicate a claim on land which refers to the land which was dispossessed 2,300 years ago, as alleged by the petitioner. So again, the petition is not consistent with the Constitution and the laws applicable on land reform, being that Restitution of Land Rights Act of 1994. Now, Chairperson, I think it's important to highlight to the committee that the 1994 Act had a cut-off date of 1998. People who wanted their land restored should have applied for restoration of their land by 31 December 1998. By 1998, on the date or the cut-off date of 31 December 1998, Chairperson, the government had received up to 80,000 claims of restoration on land. And unfortunately, Chairperson, there was a lot of pressure from members of the public that the cut-off date may have closed a lot of people out of the restoration of land rights process. And due to that cry, Parliament processed and passed in 2014 the fifth parliament passed an amendment to the Restitution of Land Rights Act to reopen the lodgement process to those claims which might be competing to the claims which have already been lodged and those claims that were not lodged by the time of the cut. Naturally, Chairperson, there was a lot of public interest in this matter. A lot of people submitted their claims and so forth. But unfortunately, Chairperson, that act, the Amendment Act, which had reopened the process, was challenged in the Constitutional Court by an organization called LAMOSA, and it succeeded in challenging the process of consultation in passing of that legislation. And the legislation was struck down. Importantly, in what the applicants, LAMOSA, was challenging in that constitutional court application, was that the claims which were lodged under the 1994 Act, which the new Act had amended, had not been settled, and it would have taken those claims, and that reopening the process would only serve to delay the process, and that they wanted the first claims to first be dealt with before a new process can be reopened. That was the essence of their argument. Even though the court found that the legislation must fail constitutional master on procedural grounds, the applicants had challenged substantively on the fact that they wanted the prioritization of the old claims, which were not in terms of the old acts. So LAMOSA 1 then succeeded, and Parliament was given 24 months to pass the legislation. Parliament did not pass the legislation. Instead, Parliament went back to the court and applied for an extension in order for it to be allowed time to pass the legislation. That did not succeed, Chairperson, which is LAMOSA 2. The Constitutional Court said, no, we've given enough time to pass the legislation. At this point, Chairperson, in Parliament, it was the private member's bill introduced by a member of the portfolio committee, which regulates this area of restoration of land rights, to reopen the lodgement process. Things currently stand, Chairperson. The Parliament is working on a bill, which is where the last process can be recorded, Chairperson. Parliament was working on a bill, portfolio committee on agriculture and rural development, to amend the Restitution of Land Rights Act of 1994 to reopen the lodgement process. I must hasten to mention, Chairperson, here that when the process of the Amendment Act was passed in 2014, amongst the claims that were lodged during that process of reopening was the Abatembu claim by King Dalindyebo of Abatembu, claiming the land of the Abatembu as he understood it. Now, the claims that were lodged under the 2014 Act, Chairperson, were interdicted until the old claims lodged under the 1990 have been processed, and then the Commission on Land Restitution of Rights would then interdict the claims which were lodged under the Amendment Act. Once again, Chairperson, the relevance of what I've just sketched now is that the Abatembu, under Kebo of Abatembu, who is recognized in terms of South African laws as a leader of Abatembu, is in fact still under consideration, because it forms part of those claims which are yet to be determined. So the issue of the question of restitution of the Abatembu lands is a matter that is under consideration as watched by the King of Abatembu in a legal process which was undertaken under the Amendment Act of 2014. In essence, Chairperson, I would say, towards my conclusion, that Parliament is seized with the matter of land reform. As we know, Section 25, the Committee of the National Assembly, in order for it to provide for expropriation compensation, the matter of the amendment of Section 25 is underway. Members of the public have been invited to come and make submissions to that process for Parliament to consider views, including views that have been espoused by the petitioner in this petition before the committee, to influence the outcome of that process that is currently underway of looking at Section 25 to make sure that it addresses the issue of land ownership. So to the extent that the petitioner had ideas about how the Constitution could be amended to provide for some of the things that he has stated in his petition, there is a process underway in Parliament where some of these ideas that he has put before the committee could be properly entertained in the processing of that amendment of Section 25. Number two, Chairperson and the committee, there is this amendment of the Restitution of Land Rights Act of 1994 to reopen the process of management of claims. Parliament, again, is seized with this process, and when that process is underway and the public is invited to make submissions to the relevant committees for consideration, again, the petitioner would have another opportunity to influence or at least put his ideas before the committees of Parliament, for Parliament to look into this claim of the petitioner of the lands that were dispossessed 2,300 years ago. And therefore, Chairperson, to conclude, I am of the view that legally the committee would not be best placed to make decisions on this matter, because firstly, the person who has put the petition before the committee lacks the necessary local standard. He doesn't have the capacity to act on behalf of Obatembu. And to the extent that all of these claims that he has made in this petition, particularly as they relate to land reform, there are processes in Parliament where the petitioner could be advised to engage in order for his ideas and views to also find expression in the 125 and in the amendment of the Restitution of Land Rights Act. Chairperson, that is in essence the presentation that I wanted to make as it relates to the laws which are relevant to the consideration of this matter. Lastly, Chairperson, without taking too much of the committee's time, I would just mention for the committee's interest that we have recently had a similar claim by a gentleman who called himself Prince Lamini, who in his application to the Land Claims Court recently claimed that he had been so ordained as a chief by the King Swati II of Swaziland that he should claim all of the lands around the area of Pretoria as lands belonging to the people of Swaziland. And he therefore wanted to interdict the government from looking into matters of land reform on all of the lands which he clearly identified around the area of Pretoria and KwaZulu-Natal. Chairperson, I just want to mention that we have now since received an order of the Land Claims Court dismissing such an application on the basis that it had no prospects of success as it was and not anchored on the Republic as they are currently applicable. I just thought that, Chairperson, our analysis here is also strengthened by this decision of the Land Claims Court, which also found, as we seem to have concluded in the advice that we're giving the committee today. Thank you very much, Chairperson. That is all we have to say.
Thank you very much. It was quite very interesting to listen to you. And also it was further clarifying us as a committee in terms of the decision that we are taking as this committee. Thank you very much. Now I will allow members of the committee, if there are further questions of clarity to the presentation that has been made, to do so, so that we are then able to agree or disagree with the report based on all what has been presented in front of us. And luckily for us as this committee, the legal advisor is saying to us, at least we have complied in terms of proper consultation with all the necessary stakeholders, and also the decision that we have arrived at least it has basis in terms of the law. What we are recommending, that we're unable to satisfy the petitioner in terms of dealing with the area that is to finalize. Honorable Jodobo, I see that your hand is up.
Oh, no, I want to support what you are saying, Honorable Chair, if you may allow me to make some reflections that we must agree with the legal opinion that the petitioner lacks the jurisdiction or the local standing, the local standing to can submit a petition or to make that particular claim because he has no legal right to do that. I think the point is sufficiently canvassed and presented that we should dismiss the petition on those grounds, but we must also dismiss it on the ground that this committee lacks the jurisdiction to preside over matters of restitution, especially when they fall outside the stipulated period, a period of 1998. I think it's 19 June 1990. Though that process, like the presenter has indicated, it did exclude a lot of people in the Republic. Hence, the process of Section 25 amendment of the Constitution is currently in place. I think we must agree to that. But we must also reinforce the fact that the land question in South Africa is very much important. It must be addressed in the way that the processes are put in place, because that the fact that the cut-off date or the pre-1913 dispossession land was excluded from the process was and indeed a travesty of justice to many people, many communities who were dispossessed of their land. And I think this process is an important process. We must support it, because at the end of the day, the land is key. It must be restored to the rightful owners, but through constitutional means and not through land grabbing or unlawful ways of transferring land to the indigenous people. I do support the whole process, and what I would recommend is to say we must, as part of our resolution decision, we must then say we advise the petitioner to refer his matter to the Section 25 Amendment Committee. And as matters stand now, his petition falls outside the jurisdiction of this committee. I do agree with those sentiments. They are very much in order. Thanks. Unmute, Chair. Unmute yourself, Chair.
Thank you very much. I didn't say that. I didn't unmute myself. I was saying thank you very much, Honorable Dodoku. Can we then allow the members of the committee, if there are other hands, I do not see one though, it was you only, we then consider the report based on all the facts that were put on the table for us today, and agree that we process the report and respond to the petitioner in line with what was in our report. Anyone to agree with the report? And I assumed and confirmed that you did report the report, you did read the report. Now I'm waiting for hands. Are we alone in the house, Honorable Dodo? It looks like we're alone here.
No, we're here, Chair.
Oh,
you're
Chair.
We are here, Chair. We're following you quite well. Thank you.
I see you, Honorable Dodo. We are here. Honorable Chair, are you then?
No.
Agree with the report?
Yes, Chair. I agree with the report, Chair.
Okay. The second for Honorable Chetwa.
I support you, Nyombos.
Oh, thank you very much, Honorable Mfayela. That then takes care of
KZN.
Our table. KZN.
Oh, yes. Homeboy.
What now we'll do, we'll take the report to the House and present on behalf of the committee so that they know that we have finalized the report of Abachem. Thank you very much, honorable members, and thank you very much to our legal advisor to come and present to us. You have empowered us in a very big way. Thank you very much. Now then, let's then check with our secretary, Mr. Mkhize. If I have not seen yet the department to be part of us in this meeting, so that we agree if they are available at 3 o'clock or they are available now, because I requested him to check their availability. Ms. Mkhize, can you give us the feedback?
Okay, thanks, Chair. Chair, I'm being told that the minister is still engaged in a meeting, so they'll be joining us at 3 o'clock, Chair.
At 3 o'clock?
Yes.
That means that we'll be having a break of an hour and come back at 3. It's a lunch break as it is. Can we agree on that? Honorable members? I seem to be alone in this meeting.
Yeah, this is fine.
We are great,
chair. Please let us not log out. Let's remain there. Because it's still going to take us time and we struggle to log in again. Thank you very much. Is the department with us now?
Yes, Honorable Chair. I am here with you, Honorable Chair. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So then that takes us first to welcome the department. We are just 1 minute to the right time of the meeting.
Who's coming from the department?
Who's coming from the department, Mr. Mkhize?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm the Director General of the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy. My name is Thabo Mokoena. Thank you very much.
Hey, Thabo Mokoena, hi, how are you?
Ndiphilile njani, Chair.
I couldn't see that on the foot. Where is the minister, Thabo?
The cabinet is actually the chair. Bengizoyi presenter officially apology. Because it's been 8:30, it's still on even now.
We don't allow that, Thabo.
Yes, yes, Chair.
Thabo, we don't allow that. Can I then talk to members of the committee?
How many Thabo Mokoenas that
I just spoke to Thabo Mokoena, the one who is not this one.
Yeah, I know Thabo Mokoena. The one of Salga, he worked in Cape Town.
Yes, I just spoke to him just now, a few minutes ago.
That is a senior. That one is senior Thabo Mokoena.
Oh, it's a senior. Okay,
yeah.
On a serious note, the minister is not with us. He's still in the cabinet. What is the day today, by the way? It's Tuesday. But why did you confirm when it is Wednesday? And you know that the minister will be in the cabinet.
In fact, he was hoping by this time they will be done with...
They will be done.
Yes, that is why the minister confirmed, yes.
Okay.
Chair?
Can I allow the member to...
Yes, but remember that we set a precedent, so maybe it's not in this committee, that if an official at the level of the DG is here, accept the presentation if the minister is not around. Remember, the difficulty about this department is that it doesn't have the deputy minister. She is first, and it's only the minister and the highest official in the department is here. My view is that, as we have done in the past, we must allow the DG to, let me sort out my vote, allow the DG to present in the absence of the minister, which in my view, I understand the reasons why the minister is not here. The cabinet supersedes every other thing in terms of government. I don't know. That's what how I look at it.
Okay. Any other member that is supporting that? Let's allow the DG to present to us and taking note that there is no deputy minister if the minister is in the cabinet. Second to that?
I second that, Madam Chair.
You second, Honorable Mfayela?
Yes.
It is seconded. As much as DG, we do not agree with officials to come and present us the executive undertakings, because we understand the undertakings to be the undertaking of the minister, not the DG. But we are turning a blind eye on this one for one reason only, that there is no deputy minister currently in the ministry. We don't want to allow a situation where the ministers will not want an account on their own undertaking. We're just doing it for that reason. Let us then allow you, Honorable, you, Mr. Mkwena, to present to us. It's quite old undertaking there from last year.
Thank you very much. I'm sure from the side of Parliament, there is someone that is coordinating the presentation. Can the person project the presentation on the screen?
Okay. They are doing it now.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngisa. Greetings to yourself as the chair of the Select Committee on Petitions Undertakings. And also greetings to the honourable members of the Select Committee, and also greetings to our support staff from Parliament as well as Ministry, including those that are from the Department and our media in attendance. Thank you very much for affording us with an opportunity to come and give an update in relation with the undertaking that the Executive Authority made to the honourable House on the 10th of October 2019. In terms of the presentation, I'll deal with only three key issues. Is background. After background, we'll give progress to date. Then after that, we'll give recommendations based on the directive that we have received from the honorable members of the House. A brief background, as we are all aware that the Asbestos Relief Trust and the Galaghadi Relief Trust were established to implement a settlement reached in the litigation that was instituted by the mine workers and also that was against the Genco group of companies. The above trust facilitated compensation to qualifying mine workers who suffered from asbestos-related diseases. Now, the settlement was at the value of $650 million, and it must also be noted, I would like to bring to the attention of the honorable members that this was a private litigation or private matter, which as a state, we did not participate, but we are fully behind the claimants. A group of aggrieved individuals, which is Khatelopele Community Asbestos, approached the government complaining that they did not receive compensation from Asbestos Relief Trust. Now, their complaint is premised on the fact that they have played a very significant role for the litigation. they argue that they are also entitled to compensation because their names were during this litigation, which was actually in it being successful. The KCA approached the department and also sought assistance to facilitate their claims from the ART, which is the Relief Trust. Now, the KCA alleged to be the clients of Dudley Noble and Spoor, which is the law firm that handled litigation against GENCO, including its subsidiary, which is GEFCO, and also their subsidiaries, many subsidiaries. We then convened a meeting at the department, the then DMR, convened a meeting between and Mr. Richard Spoor, who is a director at NNS, who was in for set litigation and also the settlement. Mr. Spoor undertook he would assist the KCA community and make submissions to the ART and Khalakhadi Relief Trust for payments whose names were used that led to the successful claim. Now, in terms of the progress to date, we have Dudley Noble and Spoor that they received a list of 570 members from Khatelopele Community Asbestos seeking compensation from ART, which is the trust. Now, what transpired here is that Mr. Spoor disputed the claim of 517 persons and reported that only 37 persons were parties to the GENCO litigation. Now, there was 37 people that have indicated that made their submission, but only one person did not submit. Only 36 submitted out of 37 people that finally submitted their claims to Mr. Spoor. Now, 11 were compensated for asbestos-related disease. Two were refused compensation on the grounds that they did not work for GENCO mine or even the subsidiaries of GENCO. 20 were refused compensation on the basis that they had not contracted the asbestos-related disease or diseases. Three claims were unresolved, and still pending. They're still working on these claims because there is information that needs to be submitted. Next slide. Now, we have 517 persons on the KCA list. Now, it's the same number that I've presented. Now, I'm just going to present the breakdown. These are the community members that marched to or met with the department to present their grievances that you know, the department had to intervene. Now, we have five persons that did not submit valid identity numbers and also could not be verified. 105 were on the NNS list. Others were never clients of Richard Spoor. Five on the Richard Meran, which is a UK-based company. And they are not actually clients of Richard Spoor. And also, we have clients that, 18 were on the list, and they are also not clients of Richard Spoor. I would explain, you know, towards the end in terms of what we are doing or intending to do on this applicant responsibility. These are not clients of Richard Spoor, but Richard Spoor was more, you know, actively involved and visible and accessible for us to engage on this matter. Next slide. Okay. Now, we have 216 that have not submitted claims to or to the KRT. And so this is the number that I would also present at the end as to what we are intending to do or planning to do. We have 67 that have submitted claims and have been compensated. And there is also 170 people that submitted claims, but they have been refused on grounds that they have no ARDs. Now, we have 27 that have been refused a compensation. They never worked for Genco Mine or the subsidiaries of Genco. And we also have 23 claims that are still pending. Now, as for the recommendations, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, making the following recommendations, that the number of individuals on the KCA list who have not submitted their claims, and there is a recommendation that you know, those persons, they would be contacted, and persons whose claims were rejected because they have no ERD, they should be re-examined at the Department of Health, one-stop center that is based in Kurumani. And they, if they have signed ARD claims, they should resubmit those claims. But if not, they will be assisted in, you know, signing them again. Those persons that have not submitted any claims to the Galagadi Relief Trust, they should prepare and submit their claims for compensation if they worked at Genco or a subsidiary of Genco, which is JEVCO. Now, there is also the ART that would, I mean, the ART would be able to facilitate all this work in consultation with the coordinators or the coordinator of the community, you know, association. Those persons whose claims have not been finalized, they would actually need to also to be assisted. They would look at reasons as to what could have happened. Some of them, they have lost their contacts. And so we will make sure that we work very closely as well with Mr. Richard Spoor to come to the finality of this matter. Now, on behalf of the department, we wish to reaffirm the commitment of the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy to continue to monitor the implementation of the litigation settlement against Genco and also its subsidiary, you know, to make sure that at the end of the day, our people are paid whatever that is due to them. Every effort will be made to conclude this matter before end of this financial year. Now, out of the 517 that, you know, are still outstanding, we have 480, actually, members that are outstanding out of 517 that will make sure that we work closely with Richard Spoor to conclude on this matter. Now, we have also made an undertaking or would like to make an undertaking to the select committee that for the other lawyers, which, you know, some of them are based in the UK, we will make sure that we do everything in our power to make a follow-up with those legal firms or the legal firm that is based in the UK. And so this is a progress to date. And in terms of the time frame, we are planning to conclude this matter by the end of the current financial year, which is 2020-2021. But we'll keep on giving an update to the honorable members. Honorable Chair and honorable members, we are really grateful that you have afforded us with this opportunity to come to the select committee to give a progress report on how far have we gone to date. I must also confirm that it was a little bit of a difficult when we started with this work, but with the hard work of the department and also the guidance from the minister, we managed to, you know, to get all relevant people to assist in taking this matter forward. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mkwena. Honorable Members, that's the short and straightforward report of the undertaking. Can we really then interact with the presentation by Mr. Mkwena? I'm looking at the hands. I don't know whether it's you did raise your hand then, Honorable Dodo, or else your hand is up now.
It's Honorable
Dodo?
Yes,
okay.
My hand is up, Honorable Chair. I want to make a contribution.
Okay. Can I then allow you to vote on the only hand?
Yes. Honorable Chair, firstly, let us welcome the update report on this important and at the same time emotive issue. Firstly, I want to really point out that this matter is a very, very long one.
Mm.
It started many, many years ago with a protracted legal dispute between the claimants and the mining companies up until they came to their senses almost 17 years ago, because the agreement to compensate these workers was in 2003. 17 years ago. For me, this is unacceptable that to this day this matter has not come to finality. But secondly, Honorable Chair, we must remember that this is a commitment that was made by the President of the Republic, Honorable Ramaphosa, who said, we as government, we are going to make sure that we follow this particular matter up. We are going to play our facilitating role. We are going to ensure that the commitments and the agreements reached are implemented, which for me places this matter at the apex of the president who made that commitment that these people, this matter must be sorted out. As follows, before I make my remarks regarding this matter. This matter, since it was in two years ago when the department started to assist, what was the program of the government, of the department, to assist in this regard? Two, how much this claimant, each one of them, received? In terms of the environmental rehabilitation of the said area, how much was spent and in what ways to ensure that the area in Kurumani was rehabilitated after this? Four, what were the reasons? Why was this company or a group of companies reluctant to pay the people? Why in the first instance? Why were they refusing? I'm asking this question, Honorable Chair, because when they fought in court, they used some of the members, and according to them, there are about 37 people whose names appeared in the court papers. And suddenly, it would seem to me that the company or the company somersaulted and reneged from paying those particular people. And what were the reasons? Why were they saying that of this 37 and not 517 or plus? They were not covered in this particular instance. We'd love to know, because these people were part of the court papers which were submitted there. Based on the responses from the DG, I would love to make follow-ups, Honorable Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Who else would like to... I do not see any hands. Maybe let me also ask my question so that the DG combines the question. DG, in your presentation, let us appreciate your presentation. And in your presentation, it doesn't tell us the total number of claimants. If you could tell us that now, and your report is saying out of, I'm assuming, the total number that we see that are outstanding. Am I correct that your 23 outstanding stems from your total number that you have received? And also you are saying you have a budget, allocation of budget of about 650 million. It is true up to now, you are not telling us how much have you spent to pay those claimants. Would like to know that. There's also another point that I would like, or it's on the issue of your communication strategy. It looks like you have a difficulty in terms of finding some of those that are supposed to be beneficiaries to this particular trust. Do you have a communication strategy? And if yes, can you briefly tell us how are you communicating with the beneficiaries of this trust? So over to you, Didi.
So I beg your indulgence, just one last question before the response. Currently, as matters stand, what are the elements of the social and labor plan of those companies in the communities where they mine at the moment to ensure that those particular communities progress beyond mining? And linked to that, whether are these companies currently still mining in those communities? Thanks, sir.
Okay. Over to you, Didi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable for the questions. I'm sorry that I've got a flu and keep on coughing. My apologies, Chair. It may be a little bit disturbing. Coming to the questions of Honorable Dodofi, the program, as we have explained, that this matter came to us when the people marched or staged a protest in Pretoria. That's when we started to interact with them actively. But before that, the then deputy minister was trying to help on this program. But there was not actually a clear program, because it was a matter that the state did not participate, as we have explained that it was a private matter. But we felt that in fact we took a decision after we were approached by this group that they have not received their payments, and so because we're under the impression all the time that everything is progressing very well, was proceeding very well, and so there were no issues up until this matter came to our attention as a department. And so it was out of that when we intervened. It might be a little bit of a little progress that we are showing to date. Also aware that the commitment was made in October last year. It was towards the end of the year. And this year, when we started to do our work, then we were disrupted by COVID-19, not to use it as an excuse, but we are still actually, committed in making sure that our people are assisted. Now, as for how much each received, because the payouts are based on medical examinations, they vary from one person to the other. We can avail this information to the honorable members. I will not be able to confirm now as to how much each received, because they did not get the same amount, all of them. On the issue of environmental rehabilitation, you will remember that historically there was no provision. That is why in the department we are having what we call derelict and ownerless mines. There was no provision for those mines that operated before the coming into effect of the MPRDA. Now, the financial provision is imposed in terms of MPRDA. As you have also correctly pointed out, Honorable China, that this matter, it started around 2003. that was just on the eve of coming into effect of the MPRDA, and the mine operated before that. And so there are historical, you know, problems in terms of the mines that operated before, you know, coming into effect of MPRDA in terms of environmental liability. That is why we are having, you know, a program in the department of the derelict and ownerless mines. With your indulgence, Honorable Chair, we can update the honorable members of the select committee, because this must have been or must be part of the mines. You remember that we presented in terms of the mines that are still having a challenge, or the mines that are under this program of derelict and ownerless. Now, there is a question again on the refusal to pay the people by the legal firm. We are still engaging on this matter because there are two key issues that we need to consider. One is that the legal firm is alleging that it did not use these people for the litigation, even though that it has been alleged by the people or the former employees that their names were used for the litigation. Now, it was part of their submission when they approached the court on this matter to be, you know, compensated, that you must have been an employee of Genco or its subsidiaries. Now, what you are getting from the company or the legal firm is that they were not part of those employees. But we are trying to find each other there, because what I can also confirm is that the trust is still solvent. It can still, there is money that is available, you know, to pay the people. And so now it's just a question of us engaging the legal firm to make sure that, you know, that money doesn't go, you know, to waste, because it's a money that is meant to compensate these people. Now, two, it is in relation with people that contracted asbestos-related disease or diseases. And so out of the medical examinations that have been done, been found that these people are not or did not contract any asbestos-related disease. Now, that is why in the presentation, we are also indicating that they must be re-examined, you know, because that is part of the commitment in ensuring that at least, you know, they are paid something out of the, you know, the claim that the settlement that they have won. I think I have covered all the questions that were raised by Honorable China. Coming to the questions of the Honorable Chair of the Select Committee, that the total number of claimants. Now, here we're looking at the people based on what has been supply you with this information. We looked specifically at the number of the people that presented to us as a department, and also with this legal firm. That is 517. And so, but this is not a conclusive number. You can also prepare the written report in terms of the total number. As I have also made reference that some of the claimants were not under, you know, Richard Spoor and his partner. They were, you know, under other legal firms. And so the outstanding, yes, you're correct, Chair. This, you know, the number may change. The 23 that is outstanding, they have paid the number that I have presented. And so, but it is an ongoing work that they are doing. I mean, you know, as I have explained, that there is a certain number that they have paid out of the 37. And now it doesn't mean that the number will stop there. Even when I was preparing to come to this meeting, I had a lengthy discussion as well with the lawyer representing, you know, or that represent that these people, that we need to come up with a better strategy on how we're going to be able to assist, because the money is there and the money is meant for the people. It must be paid to the people. And now the issue is that those requirements that they need to comply with, maybe at the right time, we'll see how do we move forward in trying to convince the legal firm to accommodate them as well. The issue of a communication strategy, I think we have taken note of this. I think when I started responding with the first question of Honorable China Dodov, I have explained in terms of how the matter came to our attention and now the disruption that was also caused by COVID, because we have an official in the department that we have specifically assigned to work on this matter. That is Mr. Xolile Mbonambi, who is the Deputy Chief Inspector of Mines. And so we would actually make sure that if there are any gaps, we improve on our communication. But I know for a fact that there had been a constant engagements between ourselves as the department and the lawyers, and also with those facilitators or of community members affected by this process. On the question of, I think it's a follow-up or it's an additional question from Honorable China, the element of social and labor plan, I think that this is actually a historical matter, that these companies, they operated before. And the issue of social and labor plan is a new concept that is couched in the new act, which is the MPRDA, that came into effect in 2004. But as for our communities, honorable members, we like to make a commitment. This is what we are discussing as well with mining companies, that they must be responsive to the needs of our people. But we understand that everything will be done in accordance with the law. And we will go back, Honorable and Chair and Honorable Members, to look into this matter as well. Despite the fact that it is a historical matter, we will then give a report in writing to the Select Committee in terms of what is the status there at the moment. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mkwena, for the response. And what I will now want to check from the members of the committee, if there are any other questions from the members. As of now, I don't see any, assuming that the hand of Honorable Dodo was then, it's not the one to do a follow-up, or else you want to do a follow-up.
But is that a comment? Okay, thank you very much once more, Honorable Chair. No, it's not a question, but a commendation and a comment from my side. Firstly, I think we must appreciate what the department has in terms of intervening to solve the problem, to act as a facilitator. It does show that indeed, the commitments that the president made to ensure that the department facilitates this process is yielding good fruits. We must really commend that, but equally commend the responses from the DG. Just as a way of commenting, taking the process forward, there are only two issues that I want to raise. The first one is that it is quite important that the department finalizes this process to ensure that all the outstanding matters are followed up, are addressed, and this matter is laid to rest in respect of in terms of the agreement that was reached by the claimants and the mining companies. It is quite important. I find it opportunistic on the part of the and mining companies who used people to lodge a claim against against the companies, and when the matter was concluded, and then they suddenly somersault and say this and that person were not part of the mine, never worked in the mine, or we can't even give them compensation, despite the fact that they use their names to lodge the claim and to present the papers to court, and without giving a justifiable reason why suddenly they exclude them. For me, I found it quite opportunistic. But secondly, I think it's quite important that the department and all other departments must think very to ensure that they assist those communities where mining was taking place or where mining is taking place. Firstly, in terms of ensuring that all the mining companies comply in terms of their social labor plan, even though it came around 2003, something has got to be done by the mining companies to ensure that they do not leave the communities in devastating situations. And that applies to all the communities. And from a mining town in Klerksdorp, we are adversely affected. We used to be the center of everything. But at the moment, we have nothing. The mining companies are gone. Those who profited, who made a lot of money from my city. My city, in terms of environment, is very terrible. In terms of the socio-economic issues of unemployment and poverty, is very, very bad, because those particular people left, they mined, after they depleted gold, they left my city under very devastation. Mm. And this situation in respect of all the cities and towns in the municipality, across the country. And this matter, in my view, Honorable Chair, has got to be looked at and be addressed properly, and the department must take a lead in terms of precisely spelling out what needs to be done to ensure that we save and protect and advance the welfare of those particular towns and cities where mining took place and they are no longer taking place. Thank you very much, Honorable.
Thank you very much. That was a comment from Honorable Dodo. And let me just highlight the fact the DG is saying on the issue of the allocation and the spending to date, you'll be able to submit that in writing, justifiably so. You may not have all the numbers in your fingertips. We'll await your response on that. There's a second one that you said you'll be you supply the info as to how many in total who submitted in writing. So we'd like to have also that information in our fingertips so that we are able to do our oversight work after we have interacted with you and check with those people and see if really the facts are accurate. So on that note, if there are no other hands, I will then give to the DG to make his last comment on our engagement with him. DG, do you have any comments?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you very much for the constructive comments that you have made. I must also confirm that we remain committed as the department in ensuring that we resolve this matter, as Honorable Dodopi has also correctly pointed out, that we need to close this chapter. And so that is a commitment that we are making. And also, Chair, in respect of the way forward that you have also provided to the meeting, we'll make sure that this information is made available to your good self. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Okay. And the last one, Gigi, from our side, is on the issue of social and labor plans. That one, we are really pleading with the department to make sure that it is implemented in all our minds, because it's a very serious matter that we end up really experiencing our communities in all those areas. Whoever is responsible to ensure that it is happening must help those communities for it to be really implemented. On that note, if there are no other questions, questions or comments from members of the committee. I will then thank very much the DG for coming and presenting the report on behalf of the minister, and again emphasize the fact that we don't take joy in that kind of situation where the DG will be presenting. But we have really turned our blind eye because of the reason that I have outlined when we started the meeting. Thank you very much, DG. Please take care, go to the doctor and deal with the flu. You know the COVID is around. We don't want you to be part of those that are dead. Okay? DG, you are excused.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Can we then continue with our program of the day and look at the minutes? Can I ask Mr. Kize to flight at least those that were present in the meeting and those who were absent, assuming that everyone has gone through the minutes, and if there are any matters that you would like to raise from the minutes, you are allowed to do so. Here are your minutes, they are flighted on the screen. What is the date of the minutes? Can you go back, Mr. Kizer?
27th of August.
All right, thank you very much. 27th of August minutes. Can we then adopt the minutes of the 27th of August?
Chair, I move. Chair, Honorable Chair?
Yes, you're allowed. Honorable Chair.
For the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of what transpired in our meeting of the 27th of August. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jodobu. Any second of the adoption of the minutes? No one is seconding. Honorable members, are you still around? The house is so quiet, it's only me and Honorable Dodo that are active in this meeting. Honorable members, Honorable Mthethwa, are you in?
Yes, Chair, I'm in.
We are looking for the seconder of the minutes.
I was not part of this one, Chair, that's why I don't know.
Thank you very much. Honorable Silebu, are you in?
I second, Chair.
Oh, you do second. Thank you very much, Honorable Silebu.
Thank you.
That's the today program. And let me thank you, all of you, for your participation. And I therefore declare the meeting closed.